You're listening to the Unheralded News and Review and Pharisee Watch, brought to you by We Hold These Truths. Each week, we look into the events that are, for the most part, ignored or overlooked by the mainstream media, and we analyze these events. Just as in Jesus' day, Pharisees still walk the earth. Among them today are the celebrity Christians who support wars in the Middle East to protect Israel. In our Pharisee Watch portion of the program, we feature stories about the unchristlike acts of these modern-day Pharisees. Our programs are led by Charles E. Carlson, the founder of We Hold These Truths, and author and editor of the Pharisee Watch, and unheralded news features on our website, whtt.org. Joining Chuck are four other founders of We Hold These Truths. Travis Steele is the owner of Steele Engineering. Mark Horton is the president of Ultra Clean Corporation. Chuck McCollum is the owner of Oakshade Development. And Tom Compton is a retired sales engineer and your announcer. Our reader is We Hold These Truths faithful volunteer and dramatist Leslie Ford. Welcome to our podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Tom Compton. We're going to talk tonight about the events in Egypt. And Chuck has prepared a very excellent paper entitled The Unacceptable Cost of Christian Zionism, Its Legacy of Pain. And Chuck, why don't you introduce it?
We will be discussing a few of the implications of what's happening in Egypt in the Unheralded News part of this program that will follow Leslie's reading.
The Unacceptable Cost of Christian Zionism, Its Legacy of Pain. A Speech to Straight Gate Ecclesia, February 1st, 2011, by Charles E. Carlson. Good evening, fellow followers of Jesus' teaching, regardless of your faith. Robert Services, a tough guy poet of the Alaskan Gold Rush, who served as an ambulance driver in World War I but refused to enter combat, wrote these words 93 years ago. Far and near, high and clear, hark to the call of war. Over the gorse and the golden dells, ringing the clamorous bells, praying and singing of wild farewells. War, war, war. The people of Egypt finally revolted against a tyrant who has repressed them and helped Israel repress Gaza Arabs into virtual bondage worse than any pharaoh ever did. As I speak to you, some American National Guard units have been activated to go to Egypt. Will they help free the people? Sadly, our own history tells us they go to support a new Egyptian tyrant just as they support the puppet governments of Iraq and Afghanistan and every act of Israel. Since World War I, war and preparation for more war has never stopped for a single generation. As an American-born follower of Christ, I place the blame on church leaders for the victims of serial wars at home and the destroyed dreams of the poor people in Gaza and Cairo. Not all of them, mind you, but many. They alone have the responsibility to know the truth and tell it, regardless of the cost. They must respect life as a gift from God. War respects no life. Truth is a product of Jesus' work. But those at megachurch pulpits who claim to follow Jesus have played the Monopoly war game with the bankers and politicians. Please stop following them. No religious sect has ever been more clearly responsible for so much bloodshed and destruction than have the Christian Zionists. This 100-year-old departure from fundamental Christianity has almost single-handedly legitimized wars upon Arab people since January 1991. Individuals within the Judeo-Christian movement are almost always motivated by altruistic religious belief. I learned this the hard way by being one of the misguided on the receiving end of this false teaching. The driving force behind its leaders is almost always tainted by money, power, and fame. Southern Baptist pastor Jerry Falwell, who died in 2007, may have been the first leader to recognize the potential for linking dispensational Christianity with Zionism and harness its combined power into a political movement. In the early 1980s, Falwell called his fledgling army the Moral Majority. It was later referred to as the Christian Right. Here are essential facts about Christian Zionism. First, it must be understood that the names by which ideas are known change. What I call Judeo-Christianity was once Evangelicalism, Dispensationalism, and finally, Christian Zionism. It is, for the most part, a 20th century phenomena and a deviation from the narrow path of following Jesus Christ. Second, Judeo-Christianity ascribes holiness to a foreign political state, Israel, as though it was itself a god. It places political Israel on the throne alongside of Jesus Christ, and in so doing, its teachers ignore and sometimes try to annul Jesus' teachings. Third, Judeo-Christian pastors and churchgoers think of themselves as moral even when they are actively contributing to immoral acts, such as supporting mass military execution of civilians in Lebanon and Gaza. They do not consider these acts immoral because they believe all events are ordained by God, and therefore they must not ever interfere with what they call God's plan. This leads them to think they can do little or nothing to improve the world they live in. Traditional Christians believe they can and must do so. Four, Judeo-Christianity is much larger than generally believed and is active in every state and community in the USA. I agree with CNN's six-hour television feature, God's Warriors, hosted by Christiane Amanpour, who correctly stated in the introductory segment, a recent poll found that 59% of American evangelicals believe Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. She also asserted, the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs estimate 85 million evangelicals believe God tells them to support Israel, more than six times the world's Jewish population. Church-going Americans are not only putting themselves in debt for war, they supply their sons and daughters to do the killing and, in some cases, to be killed and maimed. Soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan include a disproportionately large number of Judeo-Christians. We are their victims, but they are also victims of their own acts. I will close where I began with another verse from Robert Service's War, 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 about a father waiting for a letter from the front that will never come. What is the matter, young fellow, my lad? No letter again today. Why did the postman look so sad and sigh as he turned away? Well, I hear them tell that we've gained new ground, but what a terrible price we've paid. God grant, my boy, that you're safe and sound, but oh, I'm afraid, afraid.
Thank you, Leslie. We cannot examine the situation in Egypt without recognizing that our own country is a war-based economy, that not a single generation has passed since World War I without some kind of a war being fought in which Americans participated. In Egypt, the issue that we are looking at is a people who are revolting, not against particularly a war-based economy, but against a society that has repressed them. We will be writing more about Egypt and events there and relating them to the practices of our Christian leaders. The one comment I would add to this letter, which I could not have added when I wrote it a few days ago, is that we cannot find American Christian leaders who have taken a firm, positive position toward what the Egyptian people are doing in attempting to get rid of their leader, Hosni Mubarak. In our unheralded news section, we will be discussing some of the news about the situation in Egypt. One of the things that we looked for was the comments from Christian leaders. We found almost none. And when we did find a comment, it was laced with criticism, not of the Mubarak government, but of the people in Egypt who are revolting against that government.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. I think we can move into our unheralded news. And the lead story that I think you're referring to, Chuck, is by Gary L. Bauer, who is the president of American Values. This is a Christian Zionist organization, as a way to call it. Their subtitle is Your Voice to Help Protect Life, Marriage, Family, Faith, and Freedom. And he has a blog, and it's titled The End of Day Report. And it's quite telling exactly what Chuck was saying here. And this piece dated January 31st, Egyptian Revolution. He says here in the report, like most Americans, I hope that the people of Egypt and throughout the Middle East can soon live in free societies that respect their right to dissent, freedom of religion, freedom to assembly, free elections, and so on. Unfortunately, the history of the Middle East suggests that authoritarian regimes are seldom replaced by democracies. Rather, they are typically replaced by Islamic dictatorships that, besides being hostile to the U.S., are even more oppressive, unquote. And then he goes on here. But, of course, we support these regimes, like the Mubarak regime that's been in power for 30 years, with $1.5 billion of foreign aid. $1.3 billion of that goes for weapons. So our government isn't talking about withholding these funds as a method of making some change there to help the people. And to further substantiate this whole concept of foreign aid, in another report here, he makes a, this is about Rand Paul, the newly elected senator from Kentucky, who happens to be the son of Ron Paul. And here's what is this little piece says. Rand Paul, penny wise and pound foolish, question mark. No question Senator Rand Paul's commitment to fiscal responsibility, but his latest proposal to end all foreign aid, including aid to Israel, is a case of being penny wise and pound foolish. So he goes on here and so forth. But it's interesting how this is not even a subject of concern with people like this Gary Bauer, who say they're conservatives, who say they're pro-life, they want to protect life, but they seem to ignore it in places like Israel, and where there are human rights violations all the time through the 60-plus years of occupation of Palestine by the Israelis. We see a disconnect there. Yes, go ahead, Chuck.
I might add, in examining, this will, by the way, be featured in some of our future stories, this foreign aid issue. If we look at the foreign aid issue, it leads us to how these wars are initiated and even where the next one is likely to be. The most largest recipient of foreign aid at the present time, according to the United States Economic and Military Aid by major recipients, that covered the last U.S. Census, which was 2008, Afghanistan is receiving $8.892 billion each year, or in that year, in foreign aid from the United States, of which economic aid was considered to be $2.8 billion, and military aid was $6 billion. Now, most of our listeners think that we're at war with Afghanistan. So why is it that Afghanistan shows up as receiving foreign aid from our government? The reason is that our government has placed a dictator in power, or at least their man in power in Afghanistan, and he is then the Mubarak, the Hosni Mubarak of Afghanistan, and he receives this aid in order for him to maintain his power in government there. Who is the second biggest consumer of foreign aid? Iraq. Iraq receives $7.452 billion, of which $4.3 billion was military aid. This aid went, of course, to the current president of Iraq and his organization. He was, of course, placed there by the United States government after, and military, after we conquered and occupied Iraq. Now, if we look at, the picture here begins to become clear, should be clear. First, we occupy, change the government, and then we provide aid to them. And, of course, military aid is given to these really repressive governments so that they can hold down their people. This may give you some idea about why you hear about suicide bombings in places like Iraq. Who is the third largest recipient of foreign aid? It is none other than the State of Israel. It receives 4.25 total billions of dollars in aid, of which 3.381 billion are for military purposes. Next on the list, number four, is Egypt. Egypt receives 1.452 billion, as Tom pointed out, of which 1.291 billion is for military purposes. We could go on with this and talk about some other large, unusually large recipients of foreign aid. I'll mention only one. That is the Republic of Sudan. In 2008 census, it's shown that the government of Sudan received $1.1 billion of U.S. taxpayer money, of which $199 million was military aid. Did this money go to the lawful or to the central government of Sudan in Khartoum? I doubt it very much. It's very likely that every penny of it went to the revolutionary government in southern Sudan that has been holding an uprising against the government of Sudan for the last several years. So we have this picture of the money being given to governments. So this leads us back to why Hosni Mubarak is not being told to step down by the United States government. He is our man, and many other people in Arab countries are saying this. It's just that the American people don't know that Mubarak is the man. And so we can expect our government to attempt to bring in somebody to replace him who is sympathetic toward them. This is the tragedy of the revolution that's going on among the people that we see in the streets, is that they have to cope with a foreign power that's going to spend big bucks to give them a new president who will be not sympathetic to their interests, but will be first and foremost sympathetic to United States military interests. Here's a new item from a respected Islamic organization in Baltimore, Maryland, that many of us are familiar with and have come to respect over a good number of years. It is a very outspoken organization by Dr. Akalkup Siddiqui called New Trends. And in their article evaluating Egypt, I want to read a few words of what he says. Egypt, the victory of the people changes everything. For 30 years, Hosni Mubarak ravaged Egypt with 100% support of Israel and the West. Number one, 45% of the Egyptian people were put under the poverty level, which means in Egypt, $1 a day. That's total income, by the way. So many are homeless that 1.5 million sleep in graveyards. 20 million suffer from depression. 12,000 commit suicide every year. How about the Egyptian elite recruiting ground for the West? One, the Egyptian elite upper class openly became collaborators with Israel and the West. There was endless corruption. The people in power were looting the country. Random arrests and torture of the Islamic people was commonplace. Suspects, opponents of America, were sent to Egypt to be tortured. By the way, this was part of the Abu Ghraib syndrome. Number five, nightclubs and prostitution were introduced under the guise of tourism. And as a side, I can attest to some of this, having been to Egypt, and the first thing you're invited to attend is belly dancing. Number six, Israelis visit their Egyptian friends in the elite class as if Egypt was a backyard of Israel. So Israelis actually come to Egypt to vacation. The uprising of the masses, the people are taking power. The people have come out on the street in huge numbers. They are organized street by street, alley by alley. They have lost fear of the ruler's terror network. Hundreds have been killed, but more people have emerged. They belong to all sections of the society, not to any group or organization. The great majority are very young and full of energy. Attempts to hijack the movement and recruit Mohammed al-Baradi. You've seen his picture all over television. He's the man who suddenly appeared on the scene. I go back to what Dr. Siddiqui writes. Various groups are suddenly claiming credit for the revolution. None of them did anything but were total failures. The Muslim Brotherhood are trying to ride the bandwagon. Once again, they have blundered and are supporting al-Baroodi as a well-known supporter of the West and certainly does not speak for the masses. America is trying desperately to claim that it cares for the people. The masses know that America always supported Mubarak. Reform after 30 years won't fool anyone. The newly appointed Vice President Omar Suleiman is being supported by both the U.S. and the Muslim Brotherhood. He is remarkable for much terrorism and for torture. He was the usual go-between for Mubarak between Israel and the United States. Now, I'll stop there and say that this is the views of a very well-schooled and well-read and forceful Islamic American.
So this Muslim Brotherhood, which I didn't know much about, is probably a good example how somebody in this Gary Bauer, in his newsletter, he talks about the Muslim Brotherhood as being terrorist and so forth. So he may have some actual in fact, but it creates the case that we can't trust the Muslims. And, of course, he goes off in tirades against Islam and so forth, too.
Yes. And what Dr. Siddiqui is saying here is that the Muslims really cannot trust the Islamic Brotherhood for whatever reason he believes that. So he's cast some suspicion on them, but his most suspicion that he's shown is against Muhammad al-Baroodi, who you see every day on television and who's always right there to be interviewed and always looks all dressed up and who just suddenly appeared from Paris or someplace at the moment of the revolution. We have to be extremely careful not to think that this is someone who's going to save Egypt. At least that's what New Trends magazine thinks. And we have a lot of reason to take seriously what they say.
Well, hopefully the masses won't be put to sleep. I mean, that's the whole idea, of course, is to put them to sleep and placate them in a small way and then continue on things as usual.
Exactly, Tom. That's exactly true.
So there's no prominent leader for the masses right now, then? I mean,
there may be, Travis, but none is mentioned by name in New Trends magazine.
Okay.
All that they've done, basically, is pointed to the front runners and said, be careful of these people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it would be, think of our pattern here of giving foreign aid to countries or even conducting war in countries, then finding a way to get our man elected, then giving him foreign aid, including military aid, to suppress the same people who we say were suppressed under Saddam Hussein or under the Al-Qaeda, who was supposedly dominating Afghanistan and really never was.
Right. Yeah.
And, of course, all this reparations and restoration is always done under the guise that we're so moral that we do this because we're so different from everybody else and we're going to help rebuild their country and all this stuff.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tell a friend about our podcast. And please visit our website, WHTT.org. You will find a wealth of information and resources like the latest Pharisee Watch and unheralded news articles. Also, you can order our new video, Christian Zionism, The Tragedy and the Turning, Part 1. Even though this video is copyrighted, we don't mind if you copy it, as long as you copy all of it. Then you can educate your friends and acquaintances about the dangers of Christian Zionism. Start small, think big, and press on toward the straight gate.